Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a show that's hard-hitting, that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the whole world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any questions for my guests tonight, or if you'd like to ask any questions, please feel free to email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. And I'd like to introduce my missing guest host from last month, who we missed you so much, Dr. Brian Hooper. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Bonnie. I'm glad I can make it this month. Thank you.
We are, too. The women wrote me so many notes that they missed you.
Aww.
And they're listening to you. I'm really glad that
Could
join me tonight. So
how have
you been, Brian?
I've been well. Yeah, thank you. I'm doing fine.
Good. So
it's been a good summer. We're getting underway with fall, starting to get new clients coming to see me, and they're working on the same issues they're always working on, and I'm glad I can be there to help.
I know, and for those people who are listening to this show who need the help for either you or for your husband, Dr. Brian Hooper is a man to go to, and he's just wonderful as far as working with men on their issues and coming out. And I know that a lot of men have so many problems on this particular issue, and they're just so afraid because they've been living a life that's not theirs to live for so many years. And having to deal with this, I know, is very much, you know, a difficult thing for them. Wouldn't you say so?
Absolutely. Absolutely, Bonnie.
Do you think there's any defining moment in their lives when this becomes more of an issue than others?
Well,
like any certain age or?
The first thing that went through my mind was the defining moment is for many of the men that I work with when they get caught. And it's really hard, but it is a defining moment. There is the, they will always think of their lives as divided by that point in time. But there are others that, without that kind of intervention happening, tend to kind of come to realization that they can't pull this off anymore around midlife. And for some, that begins as early as 40, and for others, it's approaching 60 when they say, I just can't keep this up, it's too much effort.
I'll tell you what's interesting, what happens from many of the women who come to me, and the men, what they seem to find as a defining moment is when one of their husband's parents or both of their parents pass away.
Yeah,
that all of a sudden now
is
safe to come out. Do you find that
freedom,
also?
Right. There is that to a certain extent. I know one gentleman I was working with didn't come out until after his wife had died. And, of course, he was an older man and his parents were long deceased. But for others, that is true. They're trying to hold on afraid of losing parental love, even into, you know, middle age. And that makes some sense to me because all of us as children are seeking validation and avoiding shame.
Mm-hmm.
But the gay or lesbian person has it even rougher because they're having to dodge around who they know that they are at their core while they're seeking validation and avoiding shame. So a core part of who they are, they're hiding in the background and always looking for parental approval and love. Even when they say they're not, they are. And that happens oftentimes, into middle and even old age.
I was having a conversation today with a friend of mine, and I think people are still pretty clueless on this, so maybe you could just give a little impact or insight. When she said to me, well, I don't understand why anybody today who's gay would have to be hiding in a marriage. She said, it's totally different today. You know, so open for gays. There's so many gays who are out there and who are open and who love being gay. Why are they hiding? I said, well, you know what? It's easy for us to say it's easy to be gay because we're living in a major city. That's a liberal,
right,
open-minded city. But that does not reflect necessarily two-thirds of the rest of the country, at least. Would you agree
right
with that?
Absolutely. In fact, I was just approached to be part of an advisory committee for organization that's working in the area of domestic violence among gay and lesbian people and their families in rural areas in Tennessee. So, you know, you are spot on when you say that. The other thing is that even sometimes in bigger cities, while it's, you know, can be even in vogue to be gay or lesbian, it's not in that particular individual's family system or their religious system. It's not okay. Maybe okay for the neighbors, but not for them.
And I think that's true.
So,
you know, it's a lot of it,
yeah,
depends on, you know, your family background, your religion.
Right.
If you've been brought up being taught that this is a sin, and that you're going to go to hell if you act on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, you know, a lot of your upbringing, cultural background, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I did have a woman who wrote a letter into me because she knew you were coming in tonight, on tonight.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And, you know, because I announced it on our support group.
Sure. Sure.
And she wrote, "Dear Bonnie, I can see that Dr. Hooper will be your guest. He's always so comforting. Can you ask him to discuss this issue? I've been struggling to accept the idea that my ex-husband is gay, and, you know, and he has had 7 boyfriends within 15 months whom he is in love with.
Mm.
He keeps dragging my 2 kids, 7 and 11, into his relationship. It's hard enough for them to understand gay, but they can't understand new men in their lives every few weeks. My ex says it's none of my business. But the children are my business. Does he have any suggestions?" Nancy, she's in Tennessee, too.
Bless her heart. Amen. And, you know, here's an issue which transcends the sexual part. I don't care if the ex, either one of the two, are straight or gay. it's not appropriate to be bringing children, having them have to face a constant revolving door of the parents' boy or girlfriends. This is just not appropriate. And that's regardless of what the, you know, sexuality of the persons are that are involved. Our task for children, and I don't, you know, I'm not a child therapist, so, but this is common knowledge among all, you know, licensed clinicians, that the chief responsibility of parents is to keep the world of the children stable. I don't care if they're straight or gay. And that's just an unstable situation. So perhaps, just perhaps, she might be able to sit down with her ex and say, you know, I understand you're gay. I can appreciate that. I'm not holding that against you. What we need to do is create a stable environment for the children. And it doesn't matter if it would be me having a bunch of boyfriends coming and going or you having boyfriends coming or going. What can we do to decrease the kids' anxiety around this? Could you work on keeping that adult private area of your life a bit more private? And yes, if you meet the person you would like to spend your life with, then there's going to come a time when, sure, you'll introduce them to the kids, but could we agree that both of us will follow the same pattern of saying we'll keep our dating life separate from, you know, involving the children?
Well, I think that, you know, a lot of women have been in the situation over the years that I've been doing this, and I definitely agree with you that there's no need to bring children into anybody's dating life until there's something really, you know, going on that's worthwhile. But
right.
It's not always easy to get people
and, you know,
with
don't
that.
Hesitate to, you know, consult with, you know, she should not hesitate, consult with her lawyer and find out if there's any legal recourse she had, because part of the court order probably mandates some stability that they work on together for the sake of the children. This could be an issue for the kids, upsetting for them. And perhaps there might be, if necessary, legal remedy. But, you know, I would hope that maybe just sitting down and having a thoughtful conversation that maybe begins by saying, hey, I understand you're gay. This is not a gay-straight thing. Can we just work on agreeing on a policy together and see what happens?
Maybe you can approach it as more of a parenting thing, not a sexuality thing.
Exactly, exactly. It's a parenting thing.
Yeah. Well, getting back to, you know, the women who are going through this, there's a really good article about emotional roller coaster of divorce, and I thought maybe you could give some input to this, because certainly, you know, you understand this very well. And
yeah.
I'll read a little bit, and then maybe you could just give me your opinions of it, okay?
Sure.
So,
okay, sure.
It says, this is an article by somebody named Pauline Tesler and Peggy Thompson, and they're the authors of the book Collaborative Divorce. And it says, divorce is an emotional task unlike any other in a modern society, and different people experience it in different ways. While some individuals go through nearly all of the extreme emotional states that we describe, others have an easier time getting through this period and will maneuver the choppy waters with more skill. The important thing to remember is that all of the emotions we discuss are normal, but while some are readily acknowledged by the people experiencing them, others are so uncomfortable that it's difficult even to admit they exist. The wide array of emotional states that many people experience during the early stages of divorce can diminish their capacity to think clearly, impairing their judgment, and make rational decision-making difficult or impossible. So first you go through grief and sorrow, and being sad when a marriage ends is natural. Although it's painful, grief is a healthy emotion in response to the loss of an important relationship. We are hardwired to feel it, and it wouldn't be reasonable to expect otherwise. While sorrow and grief can be very hard to handle, most people do understand and accept the inevitability of these feelings. We know from research that theoretical writings and personal experience with thousands of people going through divorces that though the emotional import of a divorce is as severe as that of the death of an immediate family, the grief and the... The grief and recovery process has a beginning, middle, and an end. Though they may seem endless, the pain and confusion surround the separation and divorce do gradually lighten and finally go away. For most people, over a period of 18 months to 3 to 4 years following the marital separation, though the recovery can be quicker or slower. So she goes into Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who diagnosed, you know, who was a pioneer in the
field of
the whole grieving, as we've
discussed,
before.
Yeah.
You know, going through the stages of denial and anger and resentment, bargaining, depression, and acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And this one of guilt and shame. Experiencing guilt and shame is also a normal reaction to the end of a marriage. These feelings arise when we feel a sense of failure, of not having fulfilled our own and our community's expectation. In the case of divorce, people often feel guilt and or shame because they've failed to stay married for life. And that's partly a matter of personal expectations, not fulfilling the promises made to a spouse. That was the part that I wanted to talk to you about, because that seems to be, you know, a major obstacle for a lot of women to get over, you know, who are going through this particular situation. The feelings of guilt and shame seem to carry with them into their next relationship. And because I feel that they haven't really healed in the sense of rebuilding their own life, you know, they maybe have healed over their marriage is failing. But they still have this sense of guilt and shame that somewhere along the line that they're responsible. So
right.
I was wondering if you could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, that sense of where did I go wrong? What could I have done to have saved this? And, you know, the reality is, particularly for women who married gay men, there is nothing you could have done, even if you, you know, contributed to some discord in the marriage. That avoiding that would have not held it together, because he needs to be true to who he is. So remember, it's like saying, where did I go wrong that the dog I raised as a cat turned out to be a dog and not a cat? Well, you didn't, you know, you can't expect cat-like behavior out of a pup. That may sound like a strange analogy, but it's the first that comes to mind. So you've got to take a look at, you know, who you were working with, and recognize what you can work on now. What you can work on now is how you continue to have a healthy relationship with this person, provided that, you know, you had children together, because now the kids are going to be the focus as you heal and move on, and you've got to work with their father for their own good. But don't beat yourself up. There's nothing you could have done to have held it together, and because he wasn't really available to be with you in the first place.
I think my concern is that I see a lot of our women who have not healed internally, that they think they've healed from the relationship, but they haven't rebuilt themselves. And they walk into their next disaster, and it doesn't mean it's with somebody gay, it's with somebody straight.
No. Right.
And they don't recognize the same signs, because you're a man, and I know that you were part of Suzette's wonderful seminar on, you know, how men think, but I believe there truly are men out there who are looking to be who are predators, and they're looking for women who are vulnerable and women they can spot who are needy to get into a relationship. Have you run across that?
Well, I think I've heard, you know, lots of reports of that kind of thing out there among straight men, you know, in particular, because they're more of women. Yeah. The other thing I would remember is that to be careful in going into the next relationship, to not think if it goes awry, it must have been my fault. You know, not to go in with that sense of I must be the person who was somehow wrong in this.
And that's in the future relationship, right?
Right, that's what I'm saying. Allow yourself to see what's really there in that next person who comes along and make sure that they take responsibility. If you're not getting empathy coming back towards you, if you're not getting consideration coming back towards you, if the phone doesn't seem to ring on your end, you're the one who has to make all the phone calls, it's not your fault. It is your responsibility at this point to say, hey, I'm not being treated the way that I want to be treated. This person is not stepping up the way I'm stepping up, so I'm going to step on and move on. Don't be the one
exactly. Who
makes
and I
the
think
relationship
the problem is,
work. It takes two to make it work. Don't think you have to make up for his lack if he's lacking.
I think that the problem that some of our women have, as I tell them, is that we've settled for so little in our marriages to gay husbands because they can't be real husbands for so long that when we're given the crumbs, we're trying to make a cake out of them. And it's just not going to work. You know, you're back in the same situation just with somebody who's able to have sex with you. I mean, but the situation itself, there's no emotional connection. There's no sense of empathy. That you're, you know, being used for somebody's own needs. And I think what you said was beautiful, that what you can expect in a relationship is to have a partnership where, you know, somebody is calling you, somebody is pursuing you. And it's a full-scale relationship. It's not just a sexual relationship. It's not just a casual friendship. But our women seem to be, you know, and these are wonderful women who seem to just be so anxious to get back into a relationship with someone that they're settling for so little, and that's what hurts me. That, you know, not only were they hurt all those years, now they're jumping again, only to be hurt again, and wasting more time and feeling worse about themselves. So that's why I was wondering about the guilt and shame from this article, that once again you're carrying over from your marriage trip from your gay husband to your new relationship those feelings of inadequacy because you can't realize, like Dr. Hooper says, this has nothing to do with you. The marriage failed because your husband's gay, not because you did something wrong as a wife, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. I'm going to take this opportunity to promote or suggest that the ladies might want to consider a book. It's entitled How to Be an Adult, and the author is Rico. And there's a companion now, How to Be an Adult in a Relationship. It's a very small book. It doesn't tell a lot of stories, but it does give great outlines for how to notice when you're coming from a reactive mind that's just responding in a way that's not rational, and then how to recognize when you're putting up with inappropriate kind of behavior and not getting legitimate needs met and how to take a stand. I would really encourage them to get the first book and then consider if they want to get maybe the second one, How to Be an Adult and How to Be an Adult in Relationship. Just a little handbook for those of us who are trying to be adults.
And I think that's really excellent, especially when you've come out of, you know, a negative type or destructive type of relationship. And even if it wasn't a terrible relationship, it still has to take its toll on who you are as a person. And
absolutely.
I think that one of the best examples I've been reading, I'm going to have on my show in a couple of weeks. I don't know if you're familiar with Patsy Ray Dawson, if you've ever run across her works. But
only
Patsy Ray is a Christian counselor.
Only because you mentioned her, Right.
Yeah. She's a Christian counselor. And, you know, we don't always agree on everything because she's very Christian in her counseling. But we do agree on many things about destructive relationships. And I think one of the best things, because she has a piece out that was kind of geared for our women that I'll be sending them, you know, in our future newsletter. But one of the best things I think that she says that I've tried to reinforce before is that when you're living in a relationship that's not a positive relationship, you know, or she calls it a sexless, you know, marriage, because it really starts, you know, debilitating. It's the whole reaction of what the marriage is about. But how it really affects the children. And, you know, one thing she did say in this is that my children never experienced their mother's true personality growing up. trying to survive a loveless, sexless marriage so saps us, we are never emotionally free to be our best. And because of my childhood, mm-hmm. spent trying to keep an angry mother happy and my marriage to a man I could never please, I thought I was born without mm-hmm. a sense of humor. I didn't realize I was existing in survival mode and in a state of low-grade depression. Even before my divorce finalized, I was thrilled to discover I have a wonderful generic sense of humor. I laugh out loud easily and often. I so regret my children didn't get to grow up with their true mother. We should have been laughing fools. And then she said, my children suffered 1,000 times more than I ever did. This is my greatest ignorance and sorrow that still makes me cry that I didn't step out of my own pain to see theirs. I was the adult and could make my own choices. They depended on me to protect them. My son carried his scars to an early grave. My daughter and I talk about her wounds. I've apologized many times for my blindness to her pain. So I think that really hit me that she said that we don't realize that when we stay in marriages that are, you know, what I call destructive marriages, where there's a lack of intimacy, love, constant, you know, undertones of bickering and sadness. And even tonight I was talking to one of my women, and she said, you know, I really try to hide it from my kids, you know, how unhappy I am. I try to wait till they're sleeping at night before I cry. I said, but they know, don't they? She says, well, I'm trying so hard to be a good actress. I said, but kids know when you're acting. You know, they're very perceptive.
Sure do. Yeah.
Right. And this isn't necessarily just with straight gay marriages. This is with any marriage. I know that in my parents' marriage, my father wasn't gay, but it was a bad marriage, and it took a very big impact on me and my brother, you know, who grew up with their unhappiness and always blaming ourselves for it. And I think that's how children internalize your unhappiness when you can't be honest in the family and say, look, we have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then the children think that they're the problem.
Of course. They always wonder what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So I think that's the part that I regret the most, of how it stunts you as a human being. And you never really get to actualize when you're living in a marriage where you're just in survival mode. Do you think that's possible?
Absolutely. I believe that marriage is for the recognition of both individuals' wholeness and well-being. So they should help promote the wholeness and well-being in each other, help each other to be the fullest version of themselves that they can be. And in a mixed marriage like that, that's not happening.
Now, I know that I've written many times before in my earlier writings that I was so busy just trying to survive, and, you know, I was just so worried every time my husband walked out the door, you know, that he would be out there with somebody else, and, you know, I became a totally different person than who I was meant to be or who when I married him. You know, I was a really strong woman back then, and I was mentally just beaten down to a pulp. Not that he was trying to beat me down, but when you're living in a marriage where you're always suspecting that something's going wrong, and that, you know, you have to be, like, on constant guard, then instead of doing things to make your life stronger, you're sitting and wasting time trying to be a detective and always trap somebody to find proof so that, what, so you'll feel validated? I mean, it's just a constant trend of, you know, like she said, she was always in a minor depression, and I think many of us are when we're living this life.
Mm-hmm. Sure. That makes sense to me.
I know it's hard for the men. You know, I know that it has to be hard living a lie every single day, pretending to be somebody you're not. But it's still a choice that they're making.
Mm-hmm.
Consciously or subconsciously, they know who they are, and they know what's bothering them. But when they can't be honest and communicate it to their wife, then that becomes the problem. Then she starts thinking that she's the problem.
Yeah. Exactly.
And in many cases, rather than to accept it, you know, he'll turn the blame and he'll say, you are the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the things that really make women feel even worse.
Yeah, yep. Especially for men who are trying to live with denial of who they really are because they can't own that themselves, and, you know, so other people can become the target. for their
right.
for their responsibility. Yeah, yeah.
And going on with this article, they say fear and anxiety are common because our hardwired fight or flight instinct. Our bodies react to stresses such as angry phone call from a spouse. By using physical alarm mechanisms that haven't changed since our ancestors have had to react instantly to avoid being eaten by saber-toothed tigers. You react to stress physiologically in the following ways. Your heart speeds up, your adrenaline pours into your bloodstream. Your adrenaline makes your heart contract more forcefully and may cause you to feel a pounding sensation in your head. You may feel hot flashes of energy. Your attention homes in on the event that triggered the strong feelings, limiting your ability to take in the new information. When people are under chronic and severe stress, they may have anxiety attacks in which they tremble and their heart pounds. Or they may be paralyzed by almost overwhelming feelings of fear that seem to come out of nowhere. We work with many people who experience these feelings as their marriages end. People who feel overwhelmed or confused in this way tend to fall back upon old habits of thoughts and action rather than looking intelligently at the facts of their situation and weighing the best choices for the future. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. And on that note, I had somebody see me recently who's relationship had come to an end, and the party was feeling great anxiety as well as great sadness, and went to the family physician, and this was like 5 days, 6 days after the initial information, and said, I'm feeling awful. And the family physician put him on an antidepressant and for its anti-anxiety effects. And, I will never tell people not to do what their physicians say. Of course, I'm never going to say that. But the thing that went through my head was what this person needs is not more chemistry. What they need is a good therapist that can help them understand how to deal with their own racing thoughts and feelings. So I want to, and this is not about promoting me, this is about promoting good mental health, and say if you're dealing with the news, it's normal to feel anxious. It's normal to feel some depression. It's normal to feel as if life has completely changed and you're living in this gray world. After getting this news, that's very normal. It's when it progresses and continues on and you can't function that, yes, that's when we're talking about a mental illness, but it's just normal to feel devastated when you've gotten devastating news.
And I agree with you. I think too many people run to medication for situations, are situationally medicated. And I do understand it. But I've seen people really zonked out and not able to think rationally from taking too much Xanax, from taking these tranquilizers. I mean, I think the only way you can really fight pain is to deal with it. I know that, I had loss of both of my children, as you know. And, people always say to me, I don't know how you survived it. I would have, jumped off a bridge. They give me all these scenarios. And it doesn't mean there weren't times I didn't think about it. I mean, of course I thought about it.
Yep.
I got to a very dark place, when I lost my second child. And it was a matter, though, that I refused to do the medication because I wanted to just have to deal with the pain. I knew that when you lose someone you love, whether it's a child, a husband, a mother, a father, you're going to go through pain. And that's just part of, grieving, is to go through pain.
Right. Right.
And I don't think that by numbing is going to help it.
Exactly. What tends to bring the pain on is all the thoughts we have around the issue. So what we need to do is learn how to deal with those thoughts. We have thoughts. Our thoughts do not have us. And we have to find ways, and there are, to let go of certain patterns of thinking, because if we continue with them and don't give ourselves any relief, they will continue to generate the emotions that are so difficult to live with. Would you agree with that?
Mm-hmm. I just think that,
yeah.
You know, if you can't cope at all and you've gone for therapy and you're just, life is crushing you, I can see temporarily being on an antidepressant. I just feel that some people get so stuck in this as a way of life. And I think an antidepressant, you know, keeps you from falling into the depths of hell. But I think there has to be limits, because it is a situation that will pass. I mean, the divorce is inevitable, but I just don't see it. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think I feel the same way you do. I mean, you have to just go through it.
And the research has shown that people who do take medication do better if they get into therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So
I totally agree.
I mean, yeah, that's what the research says.
And I think therapy will help you focus on where you are, will take away a lot of the feelings of guilt and shame, will bring you to a sense of today and the reality. I think that you have to stop thinking about what you did 15 years ago or 12 years ago, or you didn't respond correctly to an answer, or you didn't feel like having sex that night, so we had to look elsewhere for it. You know, there's so many different things that women think in their minds that are totally irrelevant to the situation because they are feeling a sense of failure.
All those if-only statements.
Mm-hmm. Coulda, shoulda, woulda.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And there's this writer also, Brian Daniel, who wrote about quit thinking you are a failure. It's perfectly normal during and after divorce to reflect on some of the problems you had in your previous relationship with your former partner. This can help you think about some times and some things that you did wrong. You will then recognize that you should have done this or that instead. And then such thoughts will lead you to realize that you did have some shortcomings as a partner. It's natural and normal for everyone to think through such possible failures when a relationship ends. And it's okay to think that way a few times or perhaps a dozen times or so during your divorce and separation. But dwelling on your shortcomings is not productive. Repetitive thinking about you are a failure over and over again is not good for you and only lessen your self-esteem. Of course, in this, you know, once women don't understand why their marriage failed, they're always looking for the wrong reasons. And I think this is the part that hurts me most of all, is that at least the men can be honest and say, look, you know, I made a mistake, you know, I love you, I didn't mean to hurt you, but I'm gay. And I fought it, I try to fight it, and I try to not be gay. But as I'm getting older, as time's going on, I can't be who I'm not. You know, it's just I'm not wired that way, and that's how nature is. And told them the truth, then they wouldn't have to sit and think about all the things they could have done better that they didn't do bad to start with. And I think that's my point. When they feel guilty of things that have no bearing on the destruction of the marriage, that's what it's hard for me to get past, that when people can't tell the truth, that I feel that at least they owe their wives that truth of you know, why they were feeling this way. And it wasn't she was doing something bad. And I really hold these guys responsible who come to me and who say, we would have been divorced anyway because we have too many differences. No, you really don't have too many differences. You have too many things the same. You both want a man to love you, and you both want a man to show you affection. She wants it to be you, but you don't want it to be her. But don't tell me that that's why the marriage failed, because you have things that are too different. The difference is because you're gay and you're looking for a man to love and not your wife to love.
No.
But they don't get it, some of them. Some people do, but some people don't.
Some people keep
saying it wouldn't matter. You know, our marriage was bad, our marriage had this. Well,
but you know, she's even if that theory for them held true, that there were other things that would just be irreconcilable for a straight couple, even if that's the case, she still deserves to know that he's gay and that's why he's seeking divorce. She deserves to know that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's
because
a game changer.
Because it's good for her mental health.
That's the whole point. And that's why I say to men, when you take vows to a woman to love her and you tell me that you love your wife, but you're just not attracted to her anymore or you don't love her in that way anymore, but you're still using the word love. You haven't changed that word. So why doesn't love equate into telling her why it's not working anymore?
Right.
Why are you making her feel that there's something that she's doing that is the game changer here when it has nothing to do with that?
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, sometimes they listen, but not all the time.
What I find is that people often equate love with simply a feeling, and there is a loving feeling people have. But in my book, love is to want for and work for the best for another, even when the feelings aren't there. To want for and work for the best for another. And if it's because a person is gay and they're divorcing, then what is best for their spouse that they're divorcing, the most loving thing to do, is to tell them the truth.
That's what I say. You know, you claim you love your wife, and then love her enough to tell her the truth. So that she, and then they say, well, she'll only be more hurt. No, she won't be more hurt. You know,
she'll
she's going to feel better knowing that.
And understand, right, it wasn't her fault. I mean, that part wasn't her responsibility. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So, things that, you know, once again, going back to my original point, when women have to go through these divorces, and they're very hard because a lot of times, unlike other divorces, when you have straight couples, when straight divorces usually end in divorce, and about 50% of them do. It's because the people are no longer in sync with each other. They could have gotten married too early. They didn't know who they were. You know, so both of the parties agree that this marriage just isn't working. Let's get out of it in most of the cases. But when it comes to our marriages with gay husbands, many of the wives are totally blindsided because they really didn't know their husbands were gay. And they still very much love their husbands. And they're trying to hang on to their husbands to try to work around that gay thing. And hoping that maybe if they can work around it enough and they love them enough, then those feelings of whatever it is are going to go away. Because we just don't know enough about it. There's still not enough, you know, out there to teach people what this is really about. It's not about sex. It's about who people are as people. But they keep thinking that if they keep trying harder, then those feelings will go away from their husbands.
They can overcome it. Right.
They can overcome it. Or they'll realize that, you know, that that's not really what they want, or they're willing to give up their whole family and whole love of everybody just for sex, as some women think that that's only what it's about. But many of our women are still in love with their husbands, which makes, I think, the divorce that much harder. You know, it's one thing when two people want to get divorced, but it's another thing when only one person wants to get divorced, and that person is their gay husband.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So do you have any thoughts on that to make it easier for women too?
Yeah, I would just say that, you know, this is hard to say and hard to hear, but if he comes out to you and says, I'm sorry, we need to do the right thing, I can't stay married, be grateful that he's being that clear and that honest with you. You don't have to like it. I understand it's devastating. Your whole life is changing at this point. What you thought you had wasn't everything that you thought you had, but part of it was, and there's going to be confusion and all of that. But take a breath and recognize that you have the opportunity to move forward with honesty with yourself, with him, with the children, if there are any in the relationship. And that's a whole lot better than a man who's saying, you know what, you're crazy, I'm not gay, you know. Just get over yourself, and then living with that deception, but always wondering, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's hard to say, but
be
honest and be grateful. What's that? It's a gift when you know. Yeah.
And if your husband tells you the truth, no matter how much you hate it, it's better than not hearing it.
Yeah, the truth.
And that's what I think. So many women suffer so much more when they can't get a confession. And of course, getting a confession to many women means different things. And in fact, I had my friend Mike from LinkedIn, you know, a detective service. He comes on a few times a year. Because with some women, you know, proof means something very different. Like for some women, just getting proof would mean they'd have to actually walk in on their husbands having sex with someone, and they need that as their proof. And I tell them that if you're unhappy and you have all these things going on in your marriage that are just not normal kinds of things, you know, like no sex in your marriage, no affection, you know, he pecks you on the cheek, there's nothing beyond that, there's no intimacy, he's, you know, frustrated, he feels trapped. If there's all this in your marriage, I don't know what more proof you need that this marriage just isn't right.
Yeah.
I mean, 50% of people get divorced without having to think about it. You know, they don't need to justify proof. They just know they're unhappy, and it isn't working for them anymore. And that should be enough proof, right?
Well, particularly when, I mean, when it's clear that something's going on, you may not have walked in on it, but, you know, you found the porn on the computer or the text messages from the boyfriend, then all the marriage counseling in the world's not going to make that go away.
When women find gay porn on a computer, would you say this is something straight men do, to your knowledge?
They might look once because they're just curious, but more than once, straight men don't do that.
I try to tell that to women, that straight men don't do that. And, you know, somebody who's looking at gay porn, that this has to be a big red flag waving in your face, right?
Yep.
But, you know, once again, I think that it's so hard for women to accept it because they don't understand, if he's gay, why did he marry me? If he's gay, why does he want to have sex with me? And then when they confront him and he says, absolutely not, this is a pop-up, you know, they come up with 100 excuses how that gay porn showing up on the computer, none of which revolves around, I'm looking at it. You know, it's, they'll blame their kids, which really hurts me when I hear that. You know, they'll say, our son must have been looking at it. You know, anything but the truth, you know, and that's what makes it so hard. But I guess those are the problems and the issues that are going to just, you know, keep going on forever until things get straightened out in our society, which isn't going to be happening in my lifetime. Maybe in yours, Brian.
I don't know. I think I've got job security helping people cope with this. Yep, I really do.
Now that I'm reaching, September is my senior citizen birthday month, so just the shock of having to now be an official senior citizen, I always feel like, you know, writing my bucket list. So I don't think in my lifetime, Brian, but maybe in yours, because you have a few years.
But maybe in mine. All right. We'll see. I don't know. I'm not too far behind you, Bonnie.
When you get to be my age now, Brian, every minute counts, so you are pretty far behind me. That's how I look at it.
All right.
But I guess the big thing is that people should just learn that hurting others isn't a way of helping yourself. I mean, if you're in a situation where you're hurting, bringing others into your hurt really isn't the solution or the answer to it. Would you say that's pretty true?
I would agree. I would completely agree. Yep.
So, any final thoughts for
this? Reconciliation and peace. No, it certainly, boy, the time has really flown, as it always does.
And I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us, because it makes a difference in the lives of so many of our women who really need to hear it from a man's perspective, and especially a gay man's perspective, who can understand what they're going through, because, you know, it's hard to find people who have your kind of compassion and empathy that are able to relate to what we're going through. And wow. I always say, even though it seems hopeless, it's never hopeless as far as your happiness is concerned. You just have
That's
to rework
right.
it and reroute it. But most of all,
That's
I think
right.
you have to first rebuild yourself. And as Brian
mm-hmm.
was saying, therapy is a really good way to do that. After you come out of a destructive relationship and you think you're doing okay, you're really just on survival mode, just as you're getting your life back on track. So
right.
living on survival mode, not really moving to the point of being healed, doesn't make you ready to go out and meet somebody new. You know, unless you internally heal and resolve those issues that have come about from being in your marriage, you're going to be repeating many similar, those same, you know, problems when you get into your next relationship. So, Brian, women can call you, or if they want their husbands to get counseling with you, they can either go
Absolutely.
To your website,
mm-hmm.
and you can tell them your website.
It's www.d as in David, R as in Roger, so it's www.drbrianhooper.com.
Right, and there's no period after doctor. It's just drbrianhooper.com, and there you'll see, you know,
right.
Brian's beautiful picture and also a way to get in touch with him, and he will be very happy to respond to you. And this is, even though Dr. Hooper has a lot of clients who are gay, and he can really be helpful to your husband. He's worked with many of our straight wives in helping them put their lives back on track. And he does therapy either in person and you do Skype. Am I correct on that?
Right. Yeah, I will do some distance coaching, and then I do psychotherapy
mm-hmm.
in the state of Tennessee. A lot of people,
mm-hmm.
what they really need is just some coaching. There's no mental illness they've got going on. I'm happy to do that with folks across state lines. If I
mm-hmm.
do think that they are suffering from a significant depression or anxiety disorder, I will help them find an appropriate therapist. I vet the therapist first. I contact them. I ask them some specific questions to make sure I think they'll really be helpful. And
mm-hmm.
then I make the referral if I think that they really need to see somebody face-to-face. And I've done that several times. And I've gotten
yes,
wonderful
have.
Responses from therapists who've said, thank you for caring that much that you would take the time. But that's just what we do.
Right. And, if, you know, you need somebody face-to-face and you call Dr. Hooper and you can't get there. I know that several people have told me how you've really helped them hook up with other therapists,
yeah.
which, you know,
yeah.
they were so appreciative of. So if you needed to get together therapy for your family, because once again, I think family therapy can help when you're dislodging from a marriage like this, when you both
no.
have to be working together for the future of your children. You're really tied together for a long time if you have younger children, and you have to learn how to do what's best for them and for yourselves. You know, of course, your interests are at heart, but your children are the primary concern. And Dr.
Yes,
Hooper can help you with that as far as setting new boundaries, new rules, new ways to respect each other. And sometimes just having someone who can understand both sides of the straight gay issue, which Dr. Hooper certainly does, you know, is certainly better than someone who's not familiar with it and then feels they have to take sides or certain personal points of view. So at least with Dr. Hooper, you know you're in good hands, right?
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
All right. Well, Brian, I want to thank you for a wonderful show.
Thank
We're all
you.
Thrilled that you came on tonight. And I'm looking forward to talking to you again when I'm a little bit older next month.
Right. Well, I just want to say to you on behalf
of
everybody, happy birthday.
Thank you. It's September 26th, so I'll be talking to you right then. I'll be talking to you the 25th. The day before my big day. So I always
right.
look forward to that show a lot. You can sit and console me. That'll be
okay.
even better. All right. Well, I love you. And to all of our listeners, have a wonderful week. And I'll be back again next week. Good night.
Good night.